You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Episode 197 of the Read to Lead podcast is brought to you in part by cloud accounting software FreshBooks and by Gusto. FreshBooks offering a free 30-day trial with access to all their features. To find out more, visit freshbooks.com/read to lead. Gusto is refreshingly easy payroll, benefits, and HR for the modern small business. Currently offering an exclusive limited time deal. Sign up today and get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/read to lead.
If you are ambitious in order to get yours, I'm not sure that's healthy. But if you're ambitious to create more opportunities for those around you, to raise other people up, to build a platform that others can stand on, then I think that's where ambition really starts to show up and be a characteristic that we all admire and want to have.
Hi, and welcome to the Read to Lead podcast. I'm Jeff Brown, and I believe that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then intentional and consistent reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but bring you key ideas and valuable insights from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. I've known today's guest by reputation for quite some time, so when we had a chance to meet and talked about him being on the show, it was a no-brainer. I'm excited to welcome here in just a moment Mr. Brad Lominick. He's the author of a book called H3 Leadership. Be humble, stay hungry, and always hustle. I'll ask Brad to share about the distinction he makes between your calling and life's assignments along the way, his tips for developing what he calls a habit of curiosity. I'll ask him about his belief that even if you're not naturally creative or innovative, it is possible to develop habits of creativity and innovation, and lots more. On last week's show, I presented for the first time new sponsor Gusto. And if Gusto is a service you've never heard before, that's okay, because 40,000 businesses have already chosen Gusto to process billions of dollars every single year. When you get with Gusto, you can manage payroll, employees, benefits, and HR in one place. All your employees' info and deductions stay synced and up to date, which helps eliminate many of the common errors businesses make in payroll and benefits, right? Gusto automatically files and pays your payroll taxes, compiles and sends your W-2s and 1099s, and submits new hire forms. You just set it and forget it. There are great benefit options that Gusto allows you to tailor to your business, like health insurance, 401k plans, and more. And you can ditch the spreadsheets. Can I get an amen? Gusto helps you onboard employees, manage time off, and stay compliant. Right now, you can get an exclusive limited time deal. Sign up today and you get 3 months free of Gusto once you run your first payroll. To check that out and to find out more, just go to this special address. It's gusto.com/read to lead. You and me, we have a lot in common. I'll bet you're in the business of turning your ideas into value for your customers. The thing is, we need time to cultivate fresh ideas, which is exactly where our sponsor, FreshBooks, can help. FreshBooks makes cloud accounting software for professionals that's so straightforward to use, you'll save hours every week and have more time to let your creativity and ideas flourish. Now, if that's not enough incentive, the FreshBooks platform has been rebuilt from the ground up. I believe they've taken simplicity and speed to an entirely new level and added powerful new features. Things like sending a branded invoice in under 30 seconds and enabling online payments in 2 clicks is a good place to start. There's also a new projects feature where you can invite employees or contractors to collaborate and easily share information, files, and updates. Now would be a great time to try FreshBooks, and you can do it free for 30 days and get access to all of FreshBooks features. No credit card required. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/read to lead and just enter read to lead in the how did you hear about us section. That's freshbooks.com/read to lead. Brad Lominick is a strategic advisor and leadership consultant specializing in influence, innovation, generational issues, and business strategy. And for more than a decade, he served as lead visionary, and president of Catalyst. Catalyst is one of America's largest movements of next generation leaders. Brad also worked alongside John Maxwell for several years, helping build conferences and events, among them the event that would eventually become known as LeaderCast. It was one of my all-time favorites. He is also the author of The Catalyst Leader, 8 Essentials for Becoming a Change Agent, and the book that we'll be talking about today. It's called H3 Leadership, Be Humble, Stay Hungry, Always Hustle. Brad, it's a pleasure to have you officially on the Read to Lead podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. Love being on. And man, your voice is like butter. your background in radio and you can just tell that you have read hundreds and hundreds of lead-ins.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. I have to ask this. Is Lonesome Dove really your all-time favorite movie?
I know. It doesn't show up on many of those all-time favorite lists, but it really is. The reason, historically for me, I have to paint context because after college, I worked on a guest ranch in Colorado for almost 5 years. And this was in the mid-90s. We had no internet. We were out in the middle of nowhere, an hour from the closest town. We had no satellite coverage. We had one place on the entire ranch that got any kind of connection to the outside world. So Lonesome Dove, the VHS of Lonesome Dove, the big box set, that was required watching for us for hundreds of hours. So, whether we liked it or not, we memorized almost the entire movie. And it is one of my all-time favorites.
Well, I've just given you a little friendly ribbing there. I do want you to know, about an hour ago, in honor of you, for my lunch today, I'm going to eat a more of a meal later, but for lunch today, I enjoyed chips and salsa. No joke.
Ooh, listen, I'm with our mutual friend John Acuff, although he would say queso should replace salsa.
Yeah.
but a good basket of chips from Chili's. Mm-hmm. With the salsa that comes with that, and it's all you can eat. I mean, that can be a meal many times for some of us who are of the chips and salsa persuasion. So it is my downfall, that's for sure.
I haven't had their salsa in quite a while, but I do love it, and I like their queso just as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things that when you start getting into exercise and trying to be fit, it's definitely not on the list.
That's why I ran at 5:30 yesterday morning, because I knew I was going to be eating chips and salsa today.
There you go.
Well, Brad starts off the book sharing the story of a sabbatical he reluctantly took. I think it was in 2013, and he weaves pieces of that story throughout the book. Brad, I think it would be helpful here at the beginning for us to have an understanding of maybe some of the events that prompted you taking this time away in the first place.
That's the big part of the story for me personally, as well as in the book, H3 Leadership. And, the short version of that, Jeff, is I was leading, as you said, something called Catalyst, which we were doing large conferences and multiple events around the country, leadership events and gatherings. And, we were up and to the right. We were having success. We were growing every year. All the measurements were all successful, in terms of attendees and revenue and sponsorship income and impact. I mean, all the things we looked at. But for me, I was sort of going the opposite direction as a leader. And this happens to many of us, over time, we slowly sort of decay into these places that we don't expect to, but we end up just in many ways falling into. And so this was in August of 2012. And there was a gentleman that was pretty impactful in my life. And we were sitting at lunch and he said, you're done. And I looked at him and was like, what? What do you mean? And he said, you're done. I can see it in you. I can see it in your eyes. I can hear it in your voice. And he said, you need to take a break. And so I took a several month sabbatical and tried to get away and rest and get some perspective. And from that, really the book H3 was birthed out of that time, because for me, it was a recalibration of my own leadership principles. And I'd been around great leaders. I mean, I'd served with John Maxwell. I was doing the leadership thing, but yet for my own personal leadership, it was starting as I said, to decay. And I needed to recalibrate. I needed to start over. I needed to reestablish some habits in my life. And so that's really what prompted the book and was a season for me. I think that was truly a catalyst season, because it allowed me to open up to some new opportunities. It allowed me to look at, my identity. It was a really important season to make sure that the next 10 or 15 years of my life were going to be impactful compared to just continuing to pile on stuff and look like I was successful, but yet I was starting to, you know, not be the kind of leader I wanted to be.
And I imagine that had to be super, super difficult. I kind of get the sense that over that sort of decade period of time, you and your identity and Catalyst were interlinked, right?
No question. You know, I mean, I was Catalyst Brad. I mean, that was that was what everybody called me. Oh, here comes Catalyst Brad. And I loved being Catalyst Brad. I mean, Catalyst Brad got invited to the cool parties and he got invited to the White House and he got to hang out with people of influence. And, you know, regardless of what I was doing, I was actually always sort of in the inner circle. And, you know, that is incredibly intoxicating for leaders when you have a role. And this is why it's so hard for pastors, CEOs, nonprofit founders. That's why it's so hard for them to ultimately be able to step out of the captain's chair is because they look around and go, what if? What if nobody still wants to talk to me? What if nobody wants to take my emails anymore or my phone calls, or, you know, all those people who were my friends, are they still going to hang around and are they still going to want to interact with me and invite me to those things? And that's a really hard thing for a lot of us. And this is true at every season, Jeff. I mean, it's true when you're in high school. Remember the day when you showed back up at the high school football game and you're a senior in college, but you meet that friend who's still wearing the letter jacket and you want to go, come on, man. Like, that was 4 years ago and you're still like showing up at high school football practice and you're still going to the high school and you're trying to pick up the senior girls. I mean, get over it. That always happens in these seasons when we had influence and we look around and go, man, I hope that the next season I'm able to build something, you know, that gives me a sense of significance. And this is why it's so important for identity, calling, and assignment to really like be clear to leaders, because if you don't get those three buckets right, you're going to go through life sort of schizophrenic.
Yeah, I was so that guy. It's so funny to hear you talk about that. I was wrapped up in my identity was in the high school marching band in Indianapolis, one of the most successful and biggest marching bands in the state. I think we'd placed third in the country that year. And then I went off to college and I had so much trouble letting go of that during the fall, I would come back and work as part of the equipment crew. Just so I could be around it. And then I missed my high school prom. So I'm in college. I think I was a sophomore and I'm going back to my high school prom because I just didn't want to let go of those years. Because I was like, you know, big man on campus. And in college, I was nobody. And I was so hanging on to something. I so identify with that.
Well, and I've gotten the chance the last couple of years because of some friends who spend a lot of time with NFL and Major League Baseball players. I've gotten the chance to just be a friend to a lot of guys who are stepping out of those seasons of playing professional sports. And man, this is a huge issue for them. When they're 35, 36, 37, and they're stepping out of something they've been doing for 25 years, and they look around and go, is my life over? I'm just going to be on the JV team from now on. You know, I'm never going to be the starter again. And that's an incorrect statement on somebody's life. But if we see it in terms of these seasons of assignment that allow us to flourish in that particular season, then all of a sudden it gives us just an ability to understand that, you know what, like there are seasons to certain things and we move on. And it's not the end of the book. It's just a new chapter in it.
Yeah, you did a really good job of unpacking that in the book, this sort of dynamic between your calling and the assignments, which are always or almost always shifting or numerous times during the course of one's life. And I like how you identified, Brad, how your calling, though on the outside, somebody on the outside looking in wouldn't have thought this, because of the different industries you worked in, your calling stayed consistent pretty much, despite the fact the assignments were very, very different.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've had, I think now 5 seasons of assignment, and that's, you know, working on a ranch. I worked for a small management consulting firm in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I was part of a media company for a couple of years. I worked for John Maxwell, ran Catalyst, and now I'm, you know, advising and being sort of a strategic consultant for a handful of organizations in this current season. And all of those can feel like they're totally different and from sort of the outfield of where did that come from. But the connection point for me is that It's all about influencing the influencers. That would be sort of the calling statement on my life. And that's not an arrogant statement. A lot of other people have had it before. It's not just mine. But my idea of like calling on my life is that I really feel a passion and a purpose to gather and connect and equip and inspire the people who are setting in the places of influence. And I can do that in a number of ways, Jeff. You know, I did it on a guest ranch in the middle of Colorado because I was riding horses and taking out on horseback CEOs of companies. Now, at the time, I had no clue that that was what I was doing. But all of a sudden, I'm having a conversation with somebody 30 minutes into, you know, riding through the mountains. And I realized that this person is the CEO of a Fortune 50 company. And they brought their family out for a week's long vacation. And, you know, that is as true now as it was 20 years ago in terms of that being the calling on my life. And it was true in school. You know, I was always sort of the person that wanted to step out and try to be in front. You know, kindergarten, I led a revolt in the cafeteria to make sure we had chocolate and vanilla milkshakes, not just vanilla.
My wife would be so proud.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, what we do, though, is many times as leaders is we think that calling is an assignment, and we get those confused. So if my calling was to lead Catalyst, then all of a sudden I step out of that captain's chair of leading Catalyst, and therefore then my calling is done. Hmm. And that's an incorrect way to look at it. No, the Catalyst season for me was an assignment, but my calling is to influence influencers, which then should give evidence and reflect my identity, which identity at the end of the day is unchanging. You know, so identity is who you are. Calling is why you're here. And then assignment is what you do. We have to give leaders, especially today. I mean, the average 20 something is going to have 15 to 20 different seasons of assignment. Hmm. This is the new reality, whether that's right or wrong, where my father, you know, he sort of had one season in one industry, whether he liked it or didn't like it, whether he hated it or it was truly fulfilling. But the average 20 something is going to have 15 to 20. So we got to help them see the reality of, no, like you're not disloyal. You're not just a jumper. You're actually like going to have to connect the dots, because otherwise you're going to be schizophrenic going through life and just, you know, moving from one thing to the other because it feels right, compared to, no, I'm moving from one season to the other with the connection point. You know, I'm in the riverbank of my calling, even though I may be taking on, you know, different streams and different tributaries and trying this one for a while, but I'm still in that same riverbank.
I think it's Rick Warren's book, A Purpose-Driven Life, that begins with the sentence, "It's not about you."
Yes.
And Brad touches on this going back earlier in the book, a few chapters, to the one on meekness. I think a lot of successful people, Brad, don't make a connection oftentimes, depending on the circles they hang around in, between leadership and meekness. Why do you see these two as being interconnected?
Well, I think meekness is a better way to view humility, because meekness is not weakness. Hmm. Meekness is power under control. And when I think of the proper posture of a humble leader, and a true humble leader, meaning they have the posture of being meek, it means that they're like a racehorse that's been correctly bridled. They haven't lost their power. They haven't lost their energy, their enthusiasm, their sense of passion. They simply are, it's under control now. And so they walk into rooms and they don't have to look around and think, you know what, it's my goal for the next 5 minutes to prove and to validate that I am the most important person in this room. that because we've all been around those kind of leaders. Hmm. And those kind of leaders, you can tell as soon as they walk in, they're posturing for what they need as validation that they're in control, they're in charge. And so, you know, the arrogant leader, I think, Jeff, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. I think the opposite of humility is not necessarily arrogance, but it's actually insecurity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think arrogance comes from insecurity, but truly the opposite of humility is this sense of insecurity, because the leaders I'm around who are humble, they're also really confident. They have such dialed in perspective on their purpose, on their sense of who they are. They're self-aware. They've dialed in their identity. They're so content. But contentness is also not insecure. Contentness is incredibly secure because I know what I'm here for. I know what I've been wired to do. I know, you know, why I've been invited. I know all those things line up compared to the insecure leader who walks in and is trying, again, they're trying to prove their worth. They're trying to prove that they should be part of this. They're trying to show everyone that, you know what, I do belong here. I am the man. I am the woman. I am the CEO, you know, so bow down to me. That's why for me, again, meekness is such a better perspective, because it's that sense that I'm here, but you don't have to hear me roar. I can walk in and have influence without saying a word.
Well, let's tackle ambition. What's your take on ambition, Brad? What are the methods that we can employ to ensure we're, as you say in the book, feeding our ambition appetite in a healthy way?
This one is one of those that always sort of creates good discussion, because lots of us, if we're honest, we would say that ambition is not necessarily something that we see as a characteristic of leaders that we admire many times, because we've been run over by so many leaders who were ambitious. And I think ambition has to be grounded in the question for what, so or to what, you know, to what extent or to, for what are you ambitious? If you are ambitious in order to get yours, I'm not sure that's healthy. But if you're ambitious to create more opportunities for those around you, to raise other people up, to create a platform, to build a platform that others can stand on, you know, then I think that's where ambition really starts to show up and be a characteristic that we all admire and want to have. So my question always when I'm wrestling with ambition, Jeff, is this about me or is this about others? Is this about my gain or is this about helping lift other people up? Because, you know, the goal of leadership always is that you take people with you. If you're not taking people with you to the top of the mountain, then you're not winning. You know, and that was for me one of the big things that I had to wrestle with during this sabbatical time was I was winning, but my team wasn't getting the best of me, nor were they necessarily being lifted up to the places where I needed to lift them up. And I was incredibly ambitious, but I was starting to get blinded by my own sense of me being, you know, the thought leader or the author or the person showing up and, you know, being in the spotlight. And I didn't set out to do that. There was nothing in me that said, you know, 10 years into this run, I'm hoping that I can be blindly ambitious and be a leader that everybody else sort of despises. You know, nobody starts out that way. But for most of us who have the ambition DNA, which I would say most leaders do, we have to guard it and protect it. But I wouldn't say squelch it, because that's the other thing that a lot of leaders, they think, well, I have to get rid of all my ambition. No, you need to embrace it. But again, ask the question, for what? You know, that's the way that we can, I think, practically bring some redemption to ambition, is just the sense of who's gaining from this. And I love, you know, Maxwell says this. I mean, many people do. Success typically is about me, but significance is about others. So true success, true ambition, the true goal of ambition or true goal of what is this for, is to help other people win. And if I can connect the dots and the answer to the question is this is about others, then I think that's a healthy place to be.
I appreciate how you don't hold back in the book in the sense that you're quick to point out flaws that you saw in yourself along the way. It sounds, though, too, that you had staff around you that would often not be afraid to call you out on that. I remember one instance where a certain goal was reached, and a few days after you were asking, I think it was your assistant Michelle or somebody, hey, why, what's this funk? What's going on? And she's like, well, we hit this goal, and there was no, you know, attaboy from you. You just kind of went on like no big deal, and we're all kind of bummed about it.
Yes. Well, and this is the lesson I had to learn, which is I'm wired a certain way. If you're the point person, then you typically will not necessarily think about reward, think about encouragement, think about celebration the same way your team does. And my response would be, hey guys, you don't need me to thank you, or we don't need to celebrate this, because the mountain just got bigger. For me, the celebration is in, let's go pursue something grander. But for the team, they're looking around going, can we just stop, please, Brad, on the way up to the top of Everest and take in the view? we're at camp three, and I know we still got a long way to go, but man, look at that. Look at that amazing view. And I don't think that way, you know, and a lot of leaders don't. So what I had to make sure that I learned is that rewarding people through celebration doesn't make them lazy. It actually motivates them more. Mm. And I always thought, or at least the, you know, immature leader of the immature side of me as a leader always thought, if we stop and celebrate, then we're going to have to stop and celebrate more. And then we're going to have to stop and celebrate more. And that's sideways energy, that we're actually losing ground now on, you know, accomplishing our goal. But it's just the opposite. I mean, nobody gets done with being encouraged and then looks around and goes, you know what? I actually am going to work less hard based on the encouragement I just received. No, most people will work harder when you encourage them more. Most people will work harder when they celebrate more often. And, you know, so this was something I had to learn and I continue to learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's because it's not natural for me, but people on the team, they love it. The people on the team, they thrive on it. They're starving for it. You know, just that ability to stop and go, hey, well done, guys. The other thing I had to learn, Jeff, is that encouragement and celebration and reward and accomplishment, be as specific as you can be to the person. Mm. You know, I'm a handwritten card guy. Mm. I love that. I think it's one of the lost arts of leadership. And I would write occasionally handwritten cards to the team. And then 2 years later, I would walk by their cube. And you know what would be still sitting on the desk?
It'd be that card.
That handwritten card. Yeah. And for me, it was a 30-second part of my day. But for them, it was sort of this consistent fuel, this rocket fuel of encouragement that they would look at for 2 years and think, man, I'm starving for that. So be very liberal. That's mm-hmm. sort of my practical suggestion, is be very liberal, incredibly loose with your encouragement, and do it often. There's no limit to good encouragement. You can't encourage people enough. Nobody walks away from a team and says, you know, I just was too encouraged. That's why I'm leaving. But that Brad, you know, that guy, he kept celebrating too much. He encouraged me way too much. I just have to move on to somewhere else. Nobody's ever said that.
As a leader, I do identify with your propensity to want to celebrate by going after something grander, I think, is how you put it. Back in October, I started using a new planner, Michael Hyatt's Full Focus Planner. Mm-hmm. And he talks about being sure to take time to reward yourself, to celebrate, if you will, when you reach a particular goal. The first month I used it, I set a fairly significant goal and reached it by the end of the month. But it wasn't until December, till the end of this past year, before I allowed myself to reward me. I think I'm still struggling with that. I think I would, like you, feel better about rewarding myself by going after the next big thing rather than, you know, buying something or going out to dinner or throwing a party or whatever.
Yes. And again, that's so important that you say that, because the way we motivate ourselves is most of the time different than the way we should motivate others. Mm. And we have to lead people like they want to be led, not like we want to be led. That was another lesson for me, was, you know, the way I want to be led, it's typically going to be different than everyone else, because I'm wired differently. The people on the team, they want specific, customized, unique, personalized reward, encouragement, advice, perspective, motivation from you as the leader. This is why, you know, the handbook in most organizations is fine, but burn it. Because when it comes to how you lead people, you lead people based on them. You don't lead people based on a theory or based on a, you know, a protocol. Now, we have to have systems and guidelines. I understand that. I'm not saying it's the wild, wild west of organizational management, but what I am saying is that people want to feel like that the system has been created for them specifically. And the more you do that, the better your people will respond and the more motivated they'll be.
It's just like the five love languages, isn't it? I mean, you know, if I show my wife I love her, the words of affirmation and physical touch, which are the way I like to receive it, it doesn't go over as well.
You got it. That's exactly right. Yes.
It was hard for me not to go right to the chapter in the book that Brad calls A Habit of Curiosity. I wanted to start with that one. In fact, I did. I'm just going to admit it right here. What are some ways you recommend, Brad, for us to develop this kind of habit into our lives?
You said this earlier, and I'm not sure if we were recording or not yet, but your passion for now learning, this is the reason you started the podcast.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, leaders are readers and readers lead. And, you know, the premise that my greatest seasons of learning start once I get out of school, that was not necessarily understood by me until, you know, the last 10 years or so. Because we get done with school and we think, oh, I'm done. Thank you. Finally, I don't have to study for anything anymore. And this is actually when we should begin our greatest journey of curiosity, because now we can choose what we want to learn about. And so that's one side of it, is that there has to be a habit in place. If you want to lead people and you want to continue to grow in your influence, you have to be someone who is learning. And, you know, most of us coast. Most of us get done with whatever we're supposed to learn, and then we coast the rest of our life, and we only intake things that are required of us. And that's okay, but it's not, again, it's not the ultimate place you want to get to. The place you want to get to is where you're leaning forward and you're just looking around going, I want to soak up as much as humanly possible. And this is true both in the way you approach learning as well as the way you approach relationships. And I learned this, Jeff, from there's actually a guy named John Featherston who still works at Chick-fil-A in Atlanta. And the first time I met him was probably 20 years ago. Somebody had introduced us, and I went to his office at the Chick-fil-A headquarters in Atlanta. It was like the Wild Wild West shootout of who could ask the best question. And we spent an hour basically just ping-ponging back question after question after question to each other. The thing that is so true about relationships and people and influence and the way we interact as humans is that when I'm a really good question asker, I actually have more impact on that conversation compared to being someone who feels like they have to give all the answers. And a really good question will always elevate your influence way better than a really good answer. So, you know, my posture has always been, Brad, you may not be the most knowledgeable person in the room. You may not be the smartest. In fact, I'm not. I've been in most rooms I've been in. This is true for a lot of us. Mm. You know, we're never the one who we look around and go, oh gosh, hope they don't find out that I don't really know that much. Mm. But I promise you this much, I can be the best question asker in the room. Mm. And if I approach it that way, then I will always walk away from those conversations and people will remember me. You know, this is such an important thing for young leaders, especially, is they feel like they have to walk into the room and validate their importance. You might be able to, but I think the better way to gain credibility is actually just be really curious.
Well, when it comes to creativity and innovation, Brad, what would you say to somebody who claims to lack these traits? Because if I understand you correctly, these two are, whether we're born creative or not, are habits that we can develop as well.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing with creativity is intentionality. Mm. And if you're intentional about new ideas, same with innovation. You know, most of us, if we're honest, we would probably answer the question, are you creative, with the no answer? Because we always have somebody around us who feels and looks and acts and actually is more creative. But again, this is not something you can check off the list as a leader and say, well, that's somebody else's job. Innovation, somebody else's job. Or creativity, that's, you know, we have a creative team that does that. No, your job is to also be creative. And the best way I've found, because I'm that way. I mean, I have some creative parts of me, but at my core, I'm not necessarily wired for ultimate expressions of creativity. But the reason I can walk into a brainstorming meeting and people go, Brad, man, where do you come up with this stuff? and my response is, you know what? I spent the last 2 weeks intentionally digging for some ideas online, and I wrote them down. Hello. I mean, if you want to be creative, just get a Moleskine or use Evernote or have that list where you're actually capturing things that come across your either what you're reading or that you looked at online or that somebody told you. I mean, just the things we forget, Jeff, many times are the nuggets, the gold, you know, deep down in the rock. Mm. Those are the bars of gold that we end up missing, is just because we didn't capture it. If people would just capture, you know, half of what they hear, read, watch, or come across, they would have this incredible sort of folder of creativity.
Well, there's a section in the book where Brad talks about, and I had never heard this phrase before, a flexible discipline. And at first blush, that almost sounds like a misnomer, Brad. What does it mean to be flexibly disciplined exactly?
Yeah, I mean, discipline is not fun, right? I mean, that's the reality, is none of us want to be disciplined, especially when we're in charge or when we're in a place of influence. This is the number one rule of leadership, is that you lead yourself first. And if we don't lead ourselves well, then we can't lead anybody else well. Donald Miller is somebody that we had speak several times over the years. But I saw Don posting this morning on Instagram about his workout regimen. He basically took the approach of, I'm gonna join a gym, but the goal of being a part of this gym is that I'm gonna try to enjoy the discipline of working out. And I'm not gonna put the pressure on it that most of us do, which is every time I achieve something, I have to achieve something more. So he sort of took this approach of, you know, I'll show up and I might swim for 20 minutes or I might swim for 15 minutes. And the next time I show up, I'm gonna actually maybe run on the treadmill for 5 minutes. But the approach was, he's flexible within his discipline of showing up to the gym. And just that's such a good example for a lot of us in regards to how we lead ourselves. Many times we're putting so much pressure on ourselves by sort of achieving these new levels of discipline in our life that we take the fun out of it. And flexibility, I think, allows for us to actually enjoy the journey.
Well, in the time that we have left, Brad, I do have a couple of questions that I'd like to ask you that don't come directly from the book. But before I do that, is there anything else from the book that you would like to make sure that we know or walk away with?
I started with the section on humility on purpose, because I think that is the foundation of leaders. But the thing with these three H's, with humble, with hungry, and with hustle, is they have to work in tandem. We can't be humble leaders without hungry and hustle, because then we walk in the room and we know it's not about us, but we don't get anything done. We also can't be hustlers without humility, because then it's a place where we walk in and everybody goes, yep, I know what you're out for. You're going to get yours, aren't you? Yeah, this is all about you. This is about building your own kingdom. And I'll follow that leader, but I don't necessarily want to. And so these three H's have to be the legs of the stool that are all standing equally, because otherwise we're going to be out of whack. As you think about this, as you're listening, which of these do you need to improve in, and make sure that you're pushing into all three of them though equally. I can't be one of the three. I'm not going to be able to lead effectively, even two of the three. You have to have all three of these to be effective.
Well, I know enough about you to know that you're an avid reader, and I want to ask a question I ask everybody who visits, and that's for you to recommend two or three of your favorite books. What are the ones that maybe immediately come to mind as having had the biggest impact on you, and why?
Yeah, I'll give you one more recent, The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. A friend of mine turned me onto it, and it's validating for so many reasons, especially all my years of doing conferences, Jeff. Like the power of the experience and how we can actually be, we can be in charge of creating experiences for people. So that's one more recently that I think is just a game changer. I'm a big Thomas Friedman fan. His most recent Thank You for Being Late is also a more recent one that I really like. I mean, The World is Flat, which was sort of his perennial early book. This is like from early 2000s. Is still for me one of my favorite ever. The one that always ends up standing up for me over time is 21 Laws of Leadership. If I was giving a leader who's starting out in the journey three books, I would give them my book, H3, not because it's just mine, but because I think it's practical. I would give them 21 Laws by John Maxwell, and I would give them Visioneering by Andy Stanley.
Well, you certainly are in demand, I would imagine, as a public speaker, and have no doubt seen your fair share of awesome speakers from the stage. What advice, Brad, would you give to aspiring public speakers who hope to deliver an impactful and memorable public talk?
That's a great question. I love this question. First thing is it's not about you. if you're the hero, that's the wrong place to start. The other thing is authenticity, vulnerability, honesty, transparency is now in vogue. You need to lead out with your sense of vulnerability. In the old days, speaking especially, I mean, leadership in general, but especially if you're speaking in front of someone, your goal is to paint the greatest picture ever of your leadership, of your wisdom. I'm smart, I'm the expert. And you do still need to bring value, but the way you connect with an audience today more than ever is by connecting through your vulnerabilities and through your sense of authenticity and through your connection. You know, people want to see that you're trustworthy and that you're real. They want to see that I can actually listen to you because I believe you. And man, if you're believable, then now you've built a bridge for whatever message you have to actually get transferred into the lives of these people. So you're not the hero. You're not the center of the story. Customer is, the audience is, and be real.
Well, I know you're a very busy person, and I want to say thanks, first of all, for taking the time to be here. I do want to give you a chance to talk about anything you would like that you may be working on, anything you have coming up that you want others to know about, or projects, courses, whatever it might be.
I would love to take this time just to say thanks to you, Jeff. And you're doing what so many of us look around and go, oh, that's going to be too hard to build. It's going to take too long. And, you know, nobody will ever want to pay attention. You know, I don't have a chance. There's other people in the space that are way better than I am. And just kudos to you for creating this community and having guests on and building a tribe, man. This is the beauty of where we sit today, is that any of us have the ability to influence people. And so thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for letting me share a few of my lessons and the things I've learned over time. And, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, because you're giving people platforms to share what they have learned, but you're also impacting thousands of leaders who are sitting on a lawnmower or running, you know, on the treadmill, or out on a road in the middle of the country somewhere. You know, they might be sitting in their office trying not to get caught with their headphones on by their boss. But, you know, this is such a beautiful day for all of us to have ways to learn like this. So thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for letting me be a small part of it.
You can connect with Brad on most social media platforms by searching at Brad Lominick. That's Lominick. And as usual, all the links and resources we talked about, including more information on Brad's book and the books he recommended, can be found at the page created especially for this episode. You'll find it all at readtoleadpodcast.com/197 for episode 197. We sure appreciate your ratings and written reviews. If you listen to us on an Apple device, you can go to readtoleadpodcast.com/iTunes and leave a hopefully 5-star rating and written review over there. We'll be sure and say thanks in a future episode of the podcast if you do. And thank you in advance for helping Read to Lead get noticed. Thanks again to our sponsors making this episode possible, FreshBooks, with a free 30-day trial available to you, no obligation, and access to 100% of FreshBooks features free for 30 days. Go to freshbooks.com/readtolead and enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thanks also to Gusto, a refreshingly easy payroll, benefits, and HR solution for the modern small business, where you no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service to take care of your team. Sign up today and you get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/readtolead. Well, that does it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next time. Until then, remember, leaders read and readers lead.